every American I've ever known showed up, and it was great. I mean, everybody was really excited, and that's an understatement for myself. I feel like I'm still kind of trying to absorb it all, but it's a very, very important election, and I would say I was surprised, but at the same time, I had blind faith, and I felt like that's what it's needed, and a lot of people had the same blind faith.
Have you spoken to anyone back home since the election results came out?
I spoke to my family, and yeah, I spoke to my mother, my dad, who was just coming back from New York, who watched it on the plane, and I mean, everybody was pretty choked up, I think, at his speech, and I was definitely pretty choked up at it as well.
An important day and a new beginning, you think?
I hope so. I have to believe so. At the same time, I had to believe that he could overcome what he's overcome to get this far. I have to believe that the citizens will follow and that, you know, and I should do the same. What they're going through. Changes. Turn and face the strain. Changes. Don't tell them to blow up out of it.
The Arts Report for Wednesday, February 18th, 2009. If you want to get in touch with me, Tracy Fuller, you can drop me an email at arts@citr.ca. I'll be back again next week with a full hour-long episode of The Arts Report. Until then, thanks for tuning in, take care, and I'll see you next week.
You might just say, I had fun, just like Run, DMC and Jay.
Flash your Friends of CITR card and get discounts at Lucky's Comics, RX Comics, Magpie Magazine, People's Co-op Bookstore, and Spartacus Books. Support CITR and pick up your card today.
Good afternoon. You're listening to CITR 101.9 in Vancouver, and this is Audio Text. We have a sort of a special show for you today. We got an extra half an hour because Tracy's away. She generously offered us some extra time. So I'm going to be playing an interview that I did with Kagan Go recently. He read a great excerpt from his new romance novel, and I wanted to play it on Valentine's Day, but the show was a bit too short. So fortuitously, we ended up with this extra time, and so I'm going to play Kagan's interview now, and then we're going to have a whole jam-packed show ready for you right after that. So coming up right away, Kagan Go.
It's a lovely Saturday afternoon, and I'm sitting here with Kagan Go, who's going to be reading from his new romance novel for me today, and we're just going to chat a little bit about that and about writing in general in Kagan's life. So first of all, Kagan, how did you kind of get started in your writing?
Well, my father, Gopal Singh, is a poet, novelist, and a playwright. He's published 9 books, and my mother is an editor. She edits my dad's books. My older brother, Kasan, is a novelist and a poet. My brother, Kajin, is a poet. So we come from quite a literary family, and I was kind of intimidated to even acknowledge the fact that I wrote poetry or fiction or stories, because, you know, there was a lot of expectations to live up to the reputation of my family. So I would write books saying, you know, from a non-poet or something. I was kind of in denial for the longest time, but eventually it was through a series called The Manner of Speaking at the Church of Pointless Hysteria that I was the stage manager, and some of the best spoken word poets in Vancouver were performing there, and I kind of inherited an entire family overnight, and I was kind of so blown away that I wrote 40 poems within 1 month.
So what do you write about? What inspires you?
Well, I've been writing about, I've written a book called Surviving Samsara, which I hope to publish in the near future. It's a book of poems and short stories about my experiences since I was diagnosed with a manic depression or bipolar. Stories about mental health issues through personal experiences, somewhat autobiographical. So that's one book. The other book, which I'm going to read from today, is called Piñata de Amor, which means the piñata of love. And it's a romance novel. Kind of imagine a romance novel as if written by Jack Kerouac or Pablo Neruda. With a heavy dose of sex, spirituality, shamanism, and disco to boot. So it's a true story about a woman named Marian Vargas, who I met in Mexico in a town called San Miguel de Allende, an artist colony, a very beautiful colonial town, probably the most romantic place I've ever been. And she was the girlfriend of the town's most notorious playboy, Michael. And I was trying not to fall in love with her, but she was teaching me Spanish, and through the process of teaching me Spanish, I kind of was seduced into the beauty of the language and the beauty of her beauty. And one day I took her to a party where there's this young girl who was hitting a piñata. It was her birthday. And after that, I took her to the local salsa bar where we were dancing together for the first time alone. And she said to me, "Promise me something." I said, "Anything, the moon." He says, "Promise me one day you'll give me a piñata." I said, "A piñata? Why a piñata?" He says, "Ever since I was a little girl, I've always wanted a piñata. I've never had a piñata. Promise me you'll get me a piñata." I says, "I promise." And she says, "Don't lie to me. Muy traumático if you lie to me." And I said, "With you, I will always keep my promises." So the story is about my quest to actually fulfill that promise, even against her will, even against her suspicions of what my intentions were. I had to somewhat coerce her into actually coming with me one night. And the process of actually putting together the piñata, where I got a dress for her, got a ring, I picked up flowers which had fallen, bougainvillea, and put them into the piñata. I went to the Sunday market and got the flowers which were being thrown out, and I dried it into a pot pourri, and I got the rose vendors to give me the discarded rose petals, and I got an arsenal of fireworks and bottle rockets, and I put it all into the piñata, and I took it up this mountain on the hot Aztec sun to my friend Diana's house. And my friend Diana's brother taught me how to break off the nip of a cactus and pull off a strand to make a natural needle and thread, and I sewed a garland of bougainvillea, and I wrote a poem, and I put it into the piñata. And it's about the process of fulfilling that promise and the 5-year-long larger-than-life romance that resulted from that. And
well, that's an incredibly romantic story already. We haven't even started reading from the book. So can we hear a bit of that?
Sure. Okay. It was through Jeffrey I first heard about the notorious playboy Casanova, Michelangelo, a bohemian artist who travels back and forth between Europe and Mexico, leaving a trail of broken hearts behind him. According to Jeffrey, Michelangelo spends more time and energy pursuing and seducing women than he does on his painting. Michelangelo is my brother Kakim's best friend. Kakim and Michelangelo have an infamous reputation as womanizers who specialize in Chilean women. In fact, you could call them connoisseurs. Like the birds in San Miguel, every January and February, flocks of, in Kakim's words, beautiful, hysterical, and sophisticated young Chilean women would descend on San Miguel during their winter holidays. Michelangelo and Kakim had developed an antenna, a special radar that would detect newly arrived prey. sitting in the infamous White Cafe, they had spotted them across the Hadin. Kakim would give their coordinates, 2 o'clock. Draining the dregs of the cappuccinos, Kakim and Michelle would make their move. Kakim prompting like 2 method actors getting into character. Let's get to work. They would descend on them like wolves on unsuspecting sheep. Kakim and Michelangelo, San Miguel's self-appointed welcoming committee, would act as ambassadors, inviting the newly arrived guests to a spaghetti dinner. Ah, the famous spaghetti dinners. Kakim would cook, banging about in the kitchen using every pot and pan of great dramatic flair, while the poor Chilean girls starved of hunger well past 11 o'clock at night. But all would end well in a night of laughter and great merriment. 2 lucky devils having 4 to 5 women all to themselves. The reputation of Michelangelo and Kakim spread as far as Chile, for the young women invariably would gossip, and as you know, gossip often travels faster than it happens. Michelangelo and Kakim would walk up to some newly arrived Chileans looking at a map and offer their assistance. To their pleasant surprise, they discovered by crazy coincidence the girls were looking for their residence. Apparently, girlfriends had passed on their address, making their job all too easy. Another time, Michelangelo and Kakim were carrying round pots from a recent successful dinner and had just seen some girls off. A new batch introduced by other girlfriends recognized Kakim and Michelangelo from the pots they were carrying. The fame of the spaghetti parties had become so widespread. Another time, Michelangelo and Kakim saw off a batch of Chilean beauties at the airport with tears in their eyes. Once the girls were gone, they turned to leave, only to see a sign hovering before them, Arrivals, Chile. They burst into laughter, filled with male bravado and comradeship. They marched in the direction of the sign to the next fix, for they were truly addicted to what Jeffrey called chilenofrenzia. Michelangelo received so much attention from women that they would pursue him. It got so bad that women began to stalk him. He became afraid of their aggressive advances, so much so he would hide at home behind locked doors and use a broken-off car mirror to check to see if the coast was clear in the streets before daring to leave his house. If only most men were so lucky. For a few brief years, blissful years, the girls were lapping on Michelangelo and Kakim's shores, offering themselves up like suicidal capelin, rising thick as the froth on their white cafe cappuccinos. I heard word that Michelangelo is coming to San Miguel for this most recent sea invasion, Chilean invasion. I look forward to meeting this legendary Don Juan. I'm curious to know how the mind of a womanizer works. What is the secret that makes him so successful over other men? In truth, I confess, like other mortal men, I am envious and want the key that will yield the secrets to me. I want to be a gigolo, announces Mario Cabrera with a wry smile on his face over a cafe Americano at Bellas Artes to peals of laughter. He flexes his muscles to show that he has been working out at the local gym. Everyone is doubled over in laughter, so much so I can barely breathe. He invites me to join him at the gym and I reply, why, so we can both become gigolos? I ask Mario, what's the big deal about Kakim and Michelangelo's famous spaghetti dinners? I can do better than that. There and then I decide to plan a dinner party of my own. Kakim's advice on inviting women to a house dinner party. Invite lots of beautiful women, but choose the 4 you're most interested in and rank them number 1, number 2, number 3, and number 4. At the party, pay all your attention and flirt with number 3 and number 4, the ones you're least interested in, and ignore number 1, the one you're most interested in. Don't pay any attention to her, and I guarantee you by the end of the night, number 1 will be with you. I invite all the beautiful women I know, asking them to arrive at 8 o'clock. I lug bags of groceries home and spend the whole day cooking up a storm. I cook a vegetable Indian curry for the vegetarians and my specialty Thai green curry chicken for the meat eaters. I have bottles of wine and cerveza cooling in the fridge. I spread out my batik tablecloth in the dining table and hang Chinese umbrella lanterns with light scented candles. I lay out the chopsticks and wait in anticipation. 8 o'clock comes and goes. It's okay. I expect everyone to arrive fashionably late. It's 10 o'clock. Still no sign. I wait patiently. 12 o'clock. No one's coming. My plan has backfired. Jeffrey arrives with Kakim. They chow down on their lavish spread. Jeffrey chides me. Well, that's what you get for being greedy, wanting all the women to yourself. You know what your problem is? You've got to learn to be a little more subtle. What do you mean? It's so obvious you want it so badly, your tongue is practically dragging on the ground. You're scaring them away. Ignore them. Let them come to you. Instead of constantly being rejected, you can have the one to pick and choose. Don't give a damn and they will come flocking to you, guaranteed. I confide in them. My confidence is a little shaky. Being unable to speak Spanish is a great disadvantage. Kakim disagrees vehemently. The trick is to make it work for you. When I first came to Mexico, I felt the same as you, sitting there like a dumb like a mute, hoping to learn Spanish by listening. You have to dive right in. Use whatever Spanish you know and invent the rest. Turn English into Spanish-sounding words. Speak Spanglish. And you know what? The women love it. It at least shows that you are struggling to learn their language. Kakim, ever the clown, turns his inadequacies into high entertainment, inventing Spanish-sounding words to fill in the missing gaps of his vocabulary. Because he was undaunted, in time he became fluent in Spanish. My advice is the best and fastest way to learn Spanish is to get a Spanish-speaking girlfriend. My great mother set my romantic standard. Family legend claims that when she was young and feisty, she once swam across a river of crocodiles to visit her lover in the next town. Wow, how do you top that? Ever since hearing that story, my fantasy is that a woman would go through all sorts of trials and tribulations, enduring extraordinary humiliations, overcoming incredible obstacles, climbing mountains and swimming across oceans, fighting tooth and claw, if necessary, declaring war for the privilege of my affection. To Kakim, love is a sport, while to me is a religion. Now I am a man who has lost his faith. I wish that I could approach love with the same carefree levity, with less seriousness and burning intensity, and simply play without playing games. Everything Kakim does is on a grandiose scale. He tells me an example of what he considers as romance. This is a true story. There was this man who was crazy in love with this woman. He was a photographer and would follow her. The word that comes to my mind is stalk, and take photographs of her. He bought a Super 8 home movie camera and filmed everything she did. He eventually exhibited his works and she attended, and to her surprise was breathtaking to find a portrait of herself that captured the innermost essence of her soul. She made inquiries about the photographer and sought him out. Entering a studio loft, she saw thousands of photographs of her mounted on the wall, in the corner projected on the wall, images of her moving gracefully, oblivious to the secret voyeur. Following a path lit by candlelight, she heard the most exquisite piano music spilling forth from the next room. She entered to see the artist seated by the piano playing a romantic piano concerto. Just at the height of the music, right before the climax, he stops. She cries on the verge of the most fantastic orgasm. Don't stop. He turns to her and says, if you wish, I could play for you for the rest of my life. They flew into each other's arms and made mad passionate love. They had a mad passionate affair and soon after got married. they soon after got divorced, but that's not the point of the story. Now that, to me, is romantic. Muy grandiose. Hakim coached me on romance. Learn how to make a paper rose from a napkin and hand it to the most beautiful girl in the bar. At our favorite watering hole, Mamma Mia's, I find a paper rose already made on the table and hand it personally to a beautiful girl. Hakim is indignant. You didn't make it yourself. You're cheating. It's the thought that counts, I argue in self-defense. No, it has to come from you. I'm not used to being single. I'm out of practice. Hakim encourages me. I hate rejection like any other fella, but I figure, to quote the hockey legend Wayne Gretzky, the wisest words he's ever uttered, you miss 100% of the shots you never take. What the hell? Give it your best shot. What do you have to lose but lose the little face? Tonight, my sexuality is coiled tight as a spring. I drink from a water bottle, not wanting to dilute and dull the sharpness of my senses with alcohol. The band is warming up, and I stretch on the dance floor like an Olympic athlete. I pace the floor like a panther, ready to burst out of my cage. Tonight, I'm raising the stakes, performing at the zenith of my powers, and an audience gathers, knowing this, sensing the electricity in the air. The salsa band breaks into song, and I am lost in a trance, inventing moves that amalgamate kung fu, tai chi, salsa, and break dancing. My body's on fire, and I dominate the empty dance floor. I'm waiting for a dance partner, an extraordinary dancer who has the passion and guts to dance with me. A woman emerges and asks, "May I dance with you?" An American beauty, long blonde hair, firm muscles, and a dancer's body. I invite her to the dance floor with a bow, which she answers with a curtsy. I play the role of a matador, swirling my imaginary cape as she sweeps past me like a charging bull. I slide on my knees and crawl between her legs. We smile and I crawl towards the giving chase. She eludes me, plays with me, and torments me. She uses pure female sexuality. We're drenched in sweat, smiling. I voice my fears. I'm afraid we're taking up too much space. I don't want to hog the dance floor. If others want to dance, they can join us. No one's stopping them. True enough, I used to sit shyly as a wallflower, watching from the sidelines, until one day I realized in life there are those who dare to dance, and those who sit by the wayside wanting to dance but don't. I choose to dance, shed naked my inhibitions. The crowd is whistling their approval, urging us on. I think I will stop coming to Mamma Mia's every night and instead come only on Fridays. I have a grandiose idea of building such a legendary reputation as a dancer that women will have to fight and compete to have the privilege of dancing with me. It will be a contest of the survival of the fittest, Darwin's theory of natural selection put into practice. And the lucky girl who wins the dance competition will have the honor of bidding me. We will continue our dance in the horizontal position. I will drive her crazy with desire, having mastered all the ancient sexual arts from tantric sex to the Kama Sutra. The dance is over. The blonde American asked me point blank, "Did I dance well?" "You dance very well." "What am I saying? She's an incredible dancer, possibly the best I've ever danced with. But my expectations are impossibly high." She takes my compliment as a rejection. I move to kiss her on the cheek, but she evades me, erects a force field shielding her from my lecherous womanizing ways. I am a stupid fool who is building a wall of impossibly high standards around me to protect myself and keep everyone out. I order another bottle of water from the bartender. The gay, wealthy Latino named Fernando offers to buy me a beer. He leans in and says, "What's the matter? Something wrong with your pee-pee?" I am deeply offended that he is questioning my manhood. I refuse his beer. The ball bearers. Tonight, the world spins off its axes. There must be more to life than work and taxes. If you want to ingratiate yourself before blind men with big wallets, suit yourself. But I am burdened enough in this life for my own balls to carry. Returning to our table, I ask Kim, "How do you like my dancing?" "You're a show-off," Kakim answers. "You dance like a peacock." I'm taken aback by his criticism. Boss, you want to see me dance? I'll show you how to dance. I watch Kakim saunter their dance slow. The house band salutes Kakim as the salsa king. The music strikes up and the dance floor is suddenly crowded. Women flock to Kakim, vying for his attention, but he is oblivious to them, dancing to a beat all of his own.
Thank you for that, Kagan. That was great.
My pleasure.
I'm sitting here with Hal Wake, who is the
I wished on the moon for something I never knew. I wished on the moon for more than I ever knew. A sweeter rose, a softer sky, an April day that would not dance away. I wished on a star to throw me a beam or two. I begged of a star and asked for a dream or two. I looked for every loveliness. It all came true. I wished on the moon for you.
Text on CITR 101.9 in Vancouver. This is your Canadian writing show, and you've just been listening to a little bit of Billie Holiday. I chose to play Billie Holiday today because a little bit later in the show, I'm going to be reading from Jason Blackbird Selman's poetry, some of which is inspired by jazz. It's jazz poetry. It's inspired by and written to the sounds of jazz, including Billie Holiday. So you'll get a little taste of that later. Just a minute ago, you were listening to Kagongo read from his new romance novel, Piñata de Amor. And in case you missed it and you're tuning into our regular time, you can always podcast this show from CITR.ca. You can just find us on the grid and play our podcast each week. So a couple of listings going on in the literary community these days. A lot of stuff is happening tonight, so you got to get ready and make your decisions about what you're going to do. First of all, the Spilly is Speak and Sing, which is a monthly event that happens at the Cottage Bistro, which is Main and 29th, which is hosted by Spilius, Trevor Spilchin. Tonight it's going to be featuring Electric John. It's kind of an open mic slam kind of scenario. There's singing, speaking, everything you might want. It starts at 9 p.m. and I think covers something like $3 to $5. So go ahead and check that out at the Cottage Bistro tonight at 9 p.m. if you want to. Electric John is always kind of an adventure to see, so he's pretty exciting too. Also happening tonight is Eloquence. It's a Black History Month celebration of spoken word. It's 7 to 9 p.m., happening at the Britannia branch of the Vancouver Public Library, which is 1661 Napier Street. And that's going to include Adina Sumter Freytag, Delana Gale Bowen, Scruffmouth, also known as Kevon Cameron, and Roger Blenheim. So that's going to be just a spoken word event with a whole bunch of people celebrating Black History Month, which is coming to a close relatively soon. Happening on February 20th, David N. Odhiambo, who's just finished his new book, The Reverend's Apprentice, is going to be reading from that at the Vancouver Public Library with special guest Crawford Killian. Also happening tonight is Spoken World. It's two nights of poetry, actually. It's happening both tonight and Friday, so you can hold off on that if you want to do these other things tonight and go on Friday. It's an event that includes all these different spoken word artists, and it's sort of a multimedia sort of adventure happening on Granville Island. But I won't say too much about that because just about now I'm going to start playing an interview that I did with Hal Wake, who's one of the organizers of this event. So you can hear what he has to say about it and let him sell it to you, and you don't have to listen to what I say. So here's that interview right away. I'm sitting here with Hal Wake, who is the artistic director of the Vancouver Writers and Readers Festival here in Vancouver, and we're just going to chat a little bit about the upcoming Spoken World Festival. So, Hal, first of all, thanks so much for talking to CITR today.
Great pleasure. Thank you.
So tell me, what is the Spoken World Festival?
Well, it's not a festival. It's two events and a workshop, and it's part of the Cultural Olympiad and also part of a thing called Winteruption, which is a winter fair, a winter celebration down here on Granville Island. And what we have are spoken word artists coming from three different continents, four artists who are going to perform with one of the best musical ensembles in the city, led by Sal Ferreras, and also perform with a video jockey who's going to be doing visuals in the background. And the notion is, because it's part of the Cultural Olympiad, that we wanted to reach around the world to find artists who could bring the city to life with spoken word.
Great. So why don't you talk a little bit about the umbrella organization and how that all fits in?
Well, the Vancouver Writers Festival has been around for 21 years now. The festival itself happens in October, and we bring 100 writers at that time for a week in October from, again, around the world, across Canada, a lot of BC artists. We do poetry and fiction and nonfiction and graphic novels and genre and all kinds of things. And the events are onstage interviews, readings, discussions, different kinds of presentations. But the central idea behind it is to when you think about writers, they sit alone for years at a time by themselves, hammering out a work of art. It goes off into the world, and that's it. And then they start all over again. The idea of these kinds of events is to bring writers together with their readers and have a kind of dialogue and allow those writers to see the kind of profound effect that their works can often have on people.
Mm-hmm. And so, as artistic director, how did you get involved with this whole thing in the first place, and what's kind of important about it to you personally?
Well, I've been connected to Canadian writing for a long, long time, many, many years, in different guises. I worked in radio for a long time, worked at a CBC program called Morningside, where I was responsible for books and the coverage of books. So I've always had a real connection and affinity to literature. And this job is, it's a privilege, really. I get to read the works of some of the greatest writers in contemporary literature and bring them here so that they can come to Vancouver and meet their readers here. So I've been involved with the organization in various capacities for many, many years and been the artistic director for the last four.
Great. So what can we expect from Spoken World?
A multimedia extravaganza. What I like about the artists we've invited, Lem Cisse from London, from the UK, Morganix from Sydney, Australia, Reggie Kabiko from Washington, D.C., and Kinney Starr, who's from here, is that they all have very different styles and they all have very different approaches. And although they are all very kind and gentle people, I suspect that there'll be a little competitiveness once the evening gets going. They'll do 20-minute to half-hour sets each. And if you've never been to Spoken Word, it really is a combination of poetry and performance, and these guys are going to rock. I've seen three of them. I haven't seen Reggie from Washington, but he came to us through Calgary, where he was at the Calgary Spoken Word Festival a couple of months ago. And apparently the quote is, he blew the roof off the place there. So, and with the band in the background, that's a whole other element. And they'll be improvising a lot, but they are fantastic musicians. And it adds another element. Words will still be front and center, but there'll be the emotional color that music can bring. And then the VJ, I have no idea what he's going to be throwing up on the screen, but it'll be a lot of improvisation from him, too. So he'll be getting into the rhythm and texture of the words and giving us some pictures.
Great. So you said that all these performers have very different styles. Can you tell us a bit about what those styles are specifically?
Sure. Morganix from Sydney is really a hip-hop artist and comes at it from a musical and hip-hop background. He's energetic and athletic. He was here a couple of years ago for the festival, and I remember him doing a one-armed handstand on the stage as he was performing. So you'll get that from him. He's also very politically conscious. He works in Aboriginal communities in Australia, so he's got a strong connection with those kinds of issues. Reggie is won the U.S. National Slam poetry title three different times. So he comes from a slam background, which is a little more improvised and got some humor and got some, but he's also political as well. He's a Filipino-American, so he brings a perspective from the Asian community. Kinney Starr, again, a little more towards the hip-hop side, but she's a musician as well and may, in fact, bring a guitar and perform a little bit of music as well as her poetry. She's got one book of poetry out, came out last year. She's also an artist that's got her drawings in it. And Lem Cisse is the poet in residence at the South Bank Centre in London. He's published, I think, four books. And there's a wonderful kind of tender quality to a lot of what Lem does. But he also performs in a white suit. He's very dark in color himself, so there's this wonderful dark face with the glowing white suit and a tremendous amount of energy.
Great, and there's also a workshop happening. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, we thought that if we were going to bring these people from that far, it would be great to do two performances, but what else could they do to help enrich the community? And decided that having them work with young people who want to become spoken word artists or who want to at least learn more about how you put an act, a performance, poems together, that we would have them do a workshop. So on the Saturday, February 21st, there'll be a full-day workshop for, it's intended mainly for high school students, although we're open to having older students take part as well. And they'll get to work with each of the four artists individually on specific kinds of aspects of spoken word. Some of it'll be writing, some of it'll be performance, some of it'll be technique. And then at the end of the day, they'll work as a group with one of the artists and then be able to present something. Not everybody will get a chance to do a full set or anything, but there'll be a chance for them to work their chops out on stage.
Yeah, that sounds like it could be really great for new writers in the community.
We hope so, because, again, these people have performed all over the world. I mean, they're international artists. In fact, they spend most of their time on the road somewhere, you know, performing. So they've learned a lot. And again, a number of them spend a lot of time doing workshops. So they know how to teach, and they know how to work with people who are wanting to learn the craft. And sometimes, you know, that's all an artist needs, is that first little push, that kind of encouragement, somebody taking them seriously, that makes somebody say, okay, I'm going to do this and stick with it.
So for our listeners who want to know more about this workshop or the events upcoming, where should they go? What's the website?
Easiest place, yeah, is the website, www.writersfest.bc.ca. And there's a thing on the front page, right on the homepage.
Okay, great. Well, thanks again so much for talking to us today.
Thank you for coming down.
It was great.
At Dunkin' Donuts, each and every
radio show
is brewed fresh and served fresh in the peak of its flavor. If you're a tough customer, only the taste of this
radio show
will do. So go ahead, let Dunkin' Donuts make your
radio experience
exquisite.
Indeed.
Dunkin' Donuts, serving sweet treats from the Pop Underground. Thursdays, noon to 1.
The February issue of Discorder magazine is on the streets now.
This month's theme is The Finding Issue, a guide to Vancouver that will introduce new wonder into your life.
Plus articles and interviews featuring Her Jazz Noise Collective, Clips, Transmission, Tight Solid, and Pretty Maps.
As always, Discorder features reviews of the newest albums and shows and the CITR program schedule.
Discorder, that 808 magazine from CITR 101.9 FM, available anywhere that's remotely cool. The first feline feel, step the hater so
I gives it to him overkill. Coming up next, a poem from Steve Miller. He brings out a whole bunch of paper flowers at his feature recently at Raw Canvas Cafe. Here's Steve Miller. I'm sitting here with Hal Wake, who is the artistic director of...
You make me nervous. Nervous in a... Oh, shit. All right. You make me nervous. Nervous in a... You make me nervous. Nervous in what's my next line? Sort of way. I can say verses of rehearsed words. Learning phrases on stages in front of strangers is even easy to be pleasing to the ear. It's usually. But when I try to come up with playful, intellectual ways to say, I like you! I'm more stock or pathetic than poetic. So instead, I will get a bouquet of 24 different flowers. So every hour of the day, I can pull one out and say, this one's for the way for the sparkle in your eyes. This one's for the way your smile shines across the room. This one blooms daily to the warmth of your heart. This one started as a seed of thoughts of you. This one fought its way through life, striving to be strong, and made it beautiful. This one's driving all the honeybees crazy. this one sees you? I'm running out of girls here.
How's the guy?
This one sees you. Just wait! I'm not. It's my piece. I'll do what I want.
This one sees you and just tries to copy your magnificence.
This one grew right to the brilliance of your mind. And this one defines that beauty mark and finds it beautiful. This one's flowing fragrant scents to the wind. Come on, that's a good line. Flowing fragrant scents to the wind, like your hair. This one's blowing sweet honeysuckle kisses from its petals.
Yes.
This one's missing you already, because it's been 12 long hours since I've seen you last. This one passed all the other flowers by just to say hi to you first. This one would die happy if it could slide all the way from the top of your spine all the way down to your... Oh, and this one would slide all the way back. This one never stopped believing that there's so much more to be known. This one grew an extra petal just so I could end on... She likes me! This one wants to go streaking with you. Just to hear you laugh true. This one just wants to be held in your arms.
Aww. Good choice.
This one's got more charm than any other flower I've ever seen. But only half as much as you. Oh, this one's spiky and a little feisty? Because that's truth. Even if it hurts. Oh, it's gonna burn that way.
Oh, you should.
This one. This one would sacrifice all of its petals to the ground. If only you would follow them to me. And this one?
Jesus.
This one's because you make me nervous. And I don't know how else to say... I like you.
Steve Miller at his recent feature at Raw Canvas. So now I'm going to read a little bit of poetry by Jason Blackbird Selman. He is a Montreal poet and musician. He plays the trumpet as well, and he's involved in a few kind of multimedia groups down there, including Nomadic Massive and I can't remember the name of the other one. It's a spoken word jazz kind of group. So he has this thing about jazz and poetry, and the section that I'm going to be reading to you today from his collection, The Freedom I Stole, which is published by Cumulus Press, is all about that. It's what he did was he sat down and listened to all of this old jazz and blues, and he listened and he listened and he listened, and he started to write poetry sort of about the jazz or inspired by the jazz or both, while listening to this stuff. So in each case, I'll give you the artist that inspired it. This first one is called Mule, and it's inspired by Kenny Burrell, 1967. Blue, blue as I can be. Think I was born for labor the way they push me through. Think I was born for labor the way they push me through. I need a job where I can sit, think. I need something else to do. The day is long and rest is hard to come by, weary and restless, not a tear to cry, not a sorrow to share. Got up this morning, had no idea I'd work so hard. Got up this morning, had no idea I'd work so hard. Left my yard at daybreak, came home to see the stars. Learn a little, the tears and sweat will age you, grow into experience, limitations and expectations pass. Woke up this morning with a pain so far and wide. Woke up this morning with a pain so far and wide. Couldn't be bothered with getting up, so I just laid down and died. We are all looking for something, something to make us whole, complete, to ease, escape these burdens, sit down for a while, breathe, live, love, dream. Sometimes we can't get happy no matter how hard we try. Sometimes we can't get happy no matter how hard we try. Nothing in this world more common than struggle, so I guess I just struggle on till I die. This love, like a burden to bear, lay it down and leave. There was a time for crying, but it is past. So get up from these gutters and walk. These blues like the weather, such clouds that come and go. Say it isn't so. Laughter a memory made. One day freedom will find you. She will wear a familiar face. A smile for every age, a scent to awaken the courage in man. A spine that is straight, a mind that is clear. Sly, Herbie Hancock, 1973. I need to take off these gloves, fight somebody with my own bare hands, be somebody, show a little shame. We are playing a game with each other, with ourselves, with this life. We are coy, sly, grand, avoiding humanity, unsettling selves, walking with canes. Who wants some of the truth? Pry eyes from percussion, singularity sings songs of broken homes and men lost in their manhood, waiting hand and foot on the inside child. Some switch from anger to obsession to death's door, sliding silently, sweetly, with no outlet to overcome. Compassion and pain, prizes for other fighters. Sing in the ring and do your dance. All have fallen and all will fall. Getting down, going nowhere, wearing hearts out. Somewhere between happiness and madness exists a manhood that is more than mannerisms and myth. Outside of shows put on and power paraded, compassion and control spread a wink through quiet eyes. Chaos to claim us with names and not numbers, settling into this strength. A song for the summer, fire and water are one. I need to take these gloves off, fight somebody with my own bare hands. Be somebody, show a little shame. In a Sentimental Mood, Duke Ellington and John Coltrane, 1962. Wake me when this dream is over, or rather when the need to dream subsides, whenever sentiments leave us with nothing to say. Serenading the star that shines through the window of a worn-out wall. If I am caught within the whims and wings of romance, it is simply because they continue to kiss circumstance, teasing me with reminders that love without war remains possibility's complete paradise, passing trains that station and for seconds refuse to move, engines simmering as open hearts. Let us meet for a moment and let us say nothing. If I were to stare at your face and the psyche that it separates, you have unraveled my facade and I am unable to do the same. Melodies strange and sweet, ringing in the ear with whispers, your hand to touch my face with your sentimental truth. In the Dark, Nina Simone, 1967. Black men are not shy. Black men don't cry either. Some of these things are true. Some of the truth is true as well. Believe what you believe. It may be best. Kindness versus weakness. Quiet and humble, never words used to describe. Just another riot on the other side of town. The fire of minds now rumbling under unknown, unwanted, and under suspicion, while some sit unaware. What is the greatest crime? You cannot be who you say you are, for that would be unreal. The hands of the working man like Renaissance sculpture, breaking a sweat, settling accounts and healing hearts, suffer for the muse, make ends meet, the dishwasher's blues, the everyday tune, sing out from the bottom of the boat, let sorrow wash away. Black men don't cry either, black men are not shy, this anger I've inherited, police dogs and fire hoses, the hidden history full of horrors, triumphs whispered, and I find myself searching for answers, questions equally important, the reading of wills, uncover something that is true. Solitude, Billie Holiday, 1941. Alone, haunted by sanity, to scale sensations, reveling in the storm, the sweeping air of all that has not changed. The voice unheard, lips read from short distances, certain things going unsaid. In due time, in deep trouble, in Ellington's embrace, stand alone, seek solace. In this chair I look forever in the face. City streets grin, the serenade of silence, too slow to save this self. Restlessness, walking home, the days go by. Where is there to go? Where is one free from the madness of memory? Welcome to bridges, a pause and a place to rest, if only for a moment, if only for a day. Gloom with disguise in this solitude, cages and crimes of affection, lost in the woes of this world. To hide for a time, find rest from this wickedness, sit in this chair and dream, reconcile dusk and dawn to touch the sadness of song. So those were just a few of Jason Blackbird Selman's poems, jazz poetry, from his book, The Freedom I Stole, published by Cumulus Press just a couple of years ago. That's coming up to the end of our show today. I'm going to play one more thing for you, which is a recording of Chelsea Johnson. And if you have any questions or any comments or anything that you want to say, you can always email us at audiotechcitr@gmail.com. So please do send that along. And coming up next is going to be Sam Squanch's Holiday. So keep listening, and we'll be back next week.
Now repeat after me. Bugger off. Bugger off. Sod. Sod. Bloody. Bloody. Now put them all together. Bugger off, you bloody sod.
Bugger off, you bloody sod.
Okay, you're in.
Let's smash things up.
Every Saturday from noon to 1 p.m. Listen to Generation Annihilation on CITR 101.9 FM, UBC Radio in Vancouver.
Sorry for being a time hog, everyone. Chelsea Johnson is going to have to wait for another week, so you'll have to wait with bated breath for that another time.
It was a hard and soul. Sky above when he decided.